Zest.com political podcast. This week, Rick Epps and I tackled the tough issue of gun control. Now, no matter what side you fall on the gun debate, everyone needs to be at the table for this, both pro-gun activists and anti-gun activists. This time around, for this episode, we went to the pro-Second Amendment rally that was being held out in East San Diego County at the Lemon Grove Rod and Gun Club. They hosted it, and what they did was they invited anyone that wanted to come out and learn how to shoot. They would show them how to shoot, first-time shooters. They would have their club members come and teach them how to do that. We sat down with California State Assemblyman Brian Jones. Brian is a Republican from the 51st District. That's East San Diego County from Santee out almost, I think, all the way to the Imperial County line. It's a big, big district. The primary population lives closer to Santee, but there's a lot of countryside out there. And one of his key platforms in his campaign was gun ownership. That's a big issue out in East County here in San Diego. A lot of people don't realize that. In California, gun ownership is still a hot topic. Coastal cities, it's a different story. The further inland you get, it becomes a little bit more like middle America as far as these issues are concerned. And he is a fervent supporter of gun ownership and gun rights. He's even opposed to gun registration laws. He wants people to be able to buy any kind of gun they want and not have to register that they own it. We also talked to Sam, excuse me for the pronunciation of this name, Paredes, I believe. He's the executive director of the Gun Owners of California. He is equally as fervently pro-gun as the assemblyman. Now, for the sake of full disclosure, you need to know that I'm not at all what could be called pro-gun. Neither is Rick, you know. I don't believe that you should be able to buy a 50 caliber car-mounted machine gun. However, I think that there are responsible gun owners out there. And I think that this is a legitimate debate to be had, no matter what side you fall on this issue. And I think most Americans fall in the gray space on this issue. It's not as black and white as people want it to be, or maybe it's not as black and white as it has been made to be. I don't know. That's an entirely different discussion. So, Rick and I are beginning this dialogue, which I hope will lead to many more discussions on this, and I'm sure it will. And everyone, like I say, everyone needs to be at the table on this in a sincere way. Not just there fervently and fanatically defending their position, but actually listening to and understanding the positions of people that maybe you don't agree with. But that's how you solve these tough issues, and that's kind of what it's about, right? And I realize this is definitely a hot topic, and I'm sure that you'll want to hop on your soapbox over it, so be sure and do that by hopping on ours. Call 619-663-4531, 619-663-4531. Leave a message, ask a question, take part in the discussion. Like I said, everyone needs to be at the table. And now, for the gun control debate, BullersZest.com political podcast. Enjoy.
And I tried to get him to go Air Force because my dad is Air Force and my grandfather is Air Force. Mm-hmm. And he applied to the Naval Academy, uh-huh. And he did a week at the summer seminar at the Academy.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He was Marine all the way after that. So
that was it. Huh? He was sold on the
Marine
Corps.
That's what did it. Yep.
After the Naval Academy.
Yeah, because that's where you'd go
Yeah. Yeah. So gee. I played football at UCLA and I had a bad knee, so I knew my football career wasn't going to go anywhere after I got out of college. So I got in the ROTC programs and Air Force Intel Officer in the Middle East for 4 years plus. And then,
you were there at the fun time.
Well, actually, I really
did. Isn't it fun now?
Right? Being in Afghanistan in 1981, it's a lot different than being in Afghanistan 10, 15 years later.
Yeah.
It still wasn't safe. But I'd rather have been there in 1981 than be there today.
Yeah.
How big of a difference does the commander in chief make?
Not so much when you're out.
Really?
No. Okay. No. It's all what happens. You get orders come down, and back then, particularly because Reagan was president, it was a different world.
Right.
You
okay.
Just, you get ops orders to go and do what you need to do, and you just
right. You know,
so we target packages and There's some scary moments in there, though. Some, you know, there wasn't any Blackwater. There were just mercenaries and former ex-CIA guys that you dealt with, and that was those were the Blackwaters and the KBRs and you know, all the groups that are out there now. The contractors, they call them. There were different kind of same guys, but just different names back then.
Right. Yeah.
Very different world, though. Very scary world.
Yeah.
And there, you definitely need a gun. You better have a gun there. Yeah. Let me tell you. I'm being candid. You better have a gun there. Everybody has a gun there. Everybody.
Wow.
So tell us about your event. Yeah. Give us the overview.
Well, we started this 3 years ago, right after I got elected to the assembly, and it kind of just happened organically. My staff and I and Sam were. I think we're just, you know, sitting around talking about doing something. And then the club here came into the conversation. We started a year ago with 50 people. Last year we had over 100. And I think this year we're expecting over 300.
Wow.
And it's just grown each year. And it's a really great opportunity for people in the community who have never shot a firearm before that maybe have been either turned off by them or just nervous about them and have never really had a safe, comfortable opportunity or atmosphere to get introduced to them. This is their opportunity to do that.
Do you get a lot of first-timers?
As a matter of fact, I met a couple already today. The couple right there, I just met them. This is their first time. Last year, about half the shooters last year were first-time shooters. Half of them were women, and half of the women were over 60 years old. So we had about 10 women here last year that had never shot before, over 60 years old. There was a older lady of the bunch that was down on the rifle range shooting away and having a good time. And I went up to her and I asked her, have you ever shot before? And she goes, nope, never shot a firearm in my life. And she had shot the pistol, she shot the rifles. And I said, well, why are you here? What? You know, and I asked her, I go, do you mind if I ask how old you are? And she goes, I don't mind at all. I'm 82 years old. And she was proud of it. And I said, well, why are you here? Why did you come to this? And she goes, so this was in September last year. She goes, my husband died in June, and I live by myself, and I'm going to defend my home. If anybody breaks into my house, it's going to hurt them. And I thought, wow, you know, this lady understands the meaning of the Second Amendment and what it's about. It's about personal protection, defending your home, and she's going to take advantage of it. And I was really happy about that.
Do you see a difference between the kind of people that came out at the beginning and the kind of people that are coming out now? You know what I mean?
You mean from 3 years ago and today?
Two, 3 years ago.
No, I think
today.
It's the same people.
I think what's happened is that more and more people have, you know, they've heard about it now a couple of years in a row and they're curious and they're taking that step to go out and find out what it's all about. And I'll bet that it'll be about half of the people that come here have never shot before again. And then the other half will be those that have participated or are active in the shooting movement and shooting sports and will be here, and they want to give a little bit to those. They know that they're going to be here with a bunch of novice shooters, and they're going to bring some of their own guns and some of their own ammunition and give these new shooters an opportunity to try some pretty fun stuff and just remove the mystery of, you know, big guns and little guns and grow the sport. And you know, with Brian Jones' leadership in the state assembly, as one of our pro gun leaders, one of the strongest defenders of the Second Amendment in the entire Capitol, you know, we take this opportunity to come down here and we partner with him to share with people what is going on with their rights. And more people call and say, are you going to be there? And are you going to talk about what's going on in Sacramento? So yeah, so we'll be educating both the active shooter and the new shooters to what's happening to their rights. So it's an exciting event. We look forward to it. I look forward to coming. Since the first year, it's been a lot of fun.
That's interesting. I mean, both of you are very articulate men. I think a lot of people think the people up here come over either have no teeth or, you know, you guys obviously have your teeth, so that's a good thing. But it's also...
I don't know whether to be offended or complimented by that.
Yes.
But, you know, it's interesting because people, you know, who don't understand about clubs like this and groups like this, they have a tendency to have a sort of a predisposed view of what they think of people who do these things. And clearly that's not the case from the people I've seen since the few minutes we've been here. I mean, all very nice, very, you know, people think that, really, they have a different image of that.
Right.
You mentioned the word sport. You said they're growing the sport. And you mentioned the other side of that, which was the defending oneself and their property. Is there a struggle with how we as citizens understand the complexity of gun control and the right of the Second Amendment?
There is no question that there's a lack of knowledge or understanding about the Second Amendment out there. We think that by having events like this and exposing people, removing the mystery of what shooting is all about, see that it's nothing magical or something, and all of a sudden they say, you know, hey, I like this. And once you get people to enjoy it, and you explain to them that there are people who want to deny you your right to do this, lights go on. And that's a... That's a very real thing. So we want to expose as many people as possible. Our job at Gun Owners of California is to fight to defend the Second Amendment in the legislature and lobbying, electing candidates, and then going to court, but also to dispelling the public myths of guns. We make it no secret. We don't think that the Second Amendment is about the shooting sports. We think it's about, as Assemblyman Jones pointed out, it's about being able to defend yourself in your own home, in your own travels, in your own businesses. And ultimately, we wholeheartedly believe that our founding fathers enumerated the Second Amendment as a right that preexisted the establishment of the Constitution in order to defend against tyranny. And people say, oh, man, you know, come on, tyranny from government? Absolutely tyranny from government. Anybody who believes that any government cannot become tyrannical will face tyranny. We can never think that we are exempt from that or immune from that here in the United States. And our founding fathers, in their wisdom, you know, they said, they said some pretty radical things like, you know, revolution every once in a while is a good thing to bring people back to understand what freedom and liberty is about. And that's the mentality they had. And we should have the same mentality.
Well, there's a quote running around Facebook right now, and it's attributed to all kinds of different authors, and I don't know, you know, who was the original author of the quote, but it says, when the people fear the government, that's tyranny. But when the government fears the people, that's freedom.
Yes.
And, you know, obviously Sam and I are not advocating for people to take up arms and overrun the government. And, you know, that's certainly not what we're saying. What we are saying is when the people have the absolute right to their Second Amendment, then the government behaves better, and the rest of society behaves better, too, I believe. You know, you look at the counties around the country that have expanded the right to conceal carry. Well, the crime rates in those counties are dropping. You look at cities like Washington, D.C., Chicago. You know, some of these are the strictest gun laws in the country. Well, if you use the reasoning of the gun control gang, those should be the safest cities.
But don't you think there's a difference between gun ownership and, you know, a country kind of environment? Because we're kind of out in the middle of Alpine, which is nice, you know?
Right.
You're not in it, or an urban environment like downtown San Diego, downtown Chicago, downtown
Well, quite
New
frankly,
York.
A lot of these members are lawyers and doctors and accountants, engineers, CPAs, you know, professionals, retired military, retired other, you know, government workers. They live downtown. They live in Poway. They live in El Cajon. They live in Scripps Ranch. They live in Rancho Santa Fe. And so, no, the right to own firearms is universal. It doesn't matter where you live.
Yeah.
But here's the question. I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Please do.
Here.
Please
do. That's kind of our thing.
Right. No, that's,
and with all due respect, it's not because I understand what your point. Just a couple of things. I wonder if the founding fathers were sitting here today, 200 years later, looking at the types of weapons we have today that we didn't have then. Mm-hmm. You know, it took forever to load your weapon back then. I mean, and then shoot it and then reload it again. We're not talking about like things like automatic weapons, you know. And then in conjunction with automatic weapons, and then people are so resistant to even want to have them registered, register a car. We have to have a driver's license. And I'm just wondering, you know, it almost gives the concern of, well, when they're transferred or given to somebody else who does something crazy with one, how do we protect our citizens if we can't keep track of where the weapons are going?
Let me handle the registration question, and I'll let Sam handle the technology question. You know, when you talk about driving in cars, well, as a society and as a government, we've determined that driving is a privilege, and it's not a right. So, you know, you can have that privilege taken away from you, or you actually have to earn the privilege to drive by taking tests and so forth. Firearm ownership in America is a constitutional right. It's not a privilege. It's an absolute right that we're born with. It's ingrained in us. The founding fathers believed it came with us.
Do you think there's a difference between it, because it's an implicit right as opposed to an explicit right? Because they talk about, you know, groups owning guns in the sense of like a state, right?
Right.
Right. And so do you think there's a difference between that kind of right?
The Constitution, and it's been clarified by the U.S. Supreme Court, it's an individual right to own firearms in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. And America is very unique in that. There's few other countries that allow that, you know, that's a right, a birthright.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that I just want to address the difference in the registration and why I don't support, you know, gun registration, you know, based on that, you know, philosophy. But I'll let Sam handle the technology part.
And just to piggyback a little bit on the registration, we have over 400 million guns in America, 400 million. The number of actual accidents that happen with guns is infinitesimally small in comparison to the gross number. The number of accidental deaths that happen even in hunting situations where there are active shooters and stuff is in single digits in California and low.
How many hunters are there in California? When you're talking like every season?
Well, we've got over 100,000 in California at least. It used to be.
People don't think about California as a place where you can go hunt.
Oh, it's one of the biggest places to hunt in the country, and we have all kinds of hunting here but you're right. But you know, registration has obviously served no purpose in reducing crime, preventing crime, or anything like that. As a matter of fact, the only real effect that we have seen from registration is that it's been used for confiscation. They used it in New York, in the city of New York. They confiscated guns. Right here in the state of California, they use registration lists to confiscate rifles in the 1990s under Attorney General Dan Lundgren. People say, come on, the government's never going to confiscate guns. They just want to register guns. It, in fact, has happened right here in the state of California.
Well, it's happening right now with APPS, the Prohibited Persons List.
Yeah.
And look, some of the probably most of the people on that list shouldn't have a firearm. But right now, the DOJ is being so aggressive in that enforcement that they're actually overrunning, you know, proper rights that people have by getting caught up in
that
confusion.
How do you juggle that then? How do you prevent?
Let's do this. The problem that we have in Chicago, the problem we have in Barrio Logan,
Oakland,
or East L.A. or Oakland or East Palo Alto, is not a gun problem. It's a criminal problem and a mental illness problem. As long as we concentrate on controlling guns, we will create more victims, as has been proven by history. Okay? As long as we refuse to try to go and exercise strong crimes against criminal activities, enforcement, or we continue to just ignore the mental illness situation, or probably the biggest factor, our government continues to be a complete Charlie Foxtrot of management activity. I mean, it is so messed up. As Assemblyman Jones pointed out, the APPS program, the Arms Prohibited Persons System, 19,000 people on that list of people that shouldn't have guns according to the government. Well, the reality is that probably more than half the people on that list shouldn't be on that list because our government is so inefficient in the way that it implements this program.
So you're saying it's like the no-fly list in a lot of ways. People get once you're on it.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah, exactly.
A woman, let me put, you know, one-third of the list are criminals. Only one-third of the list. Mm-hmm. And half of that third are people that have committed felonies after they purchased a gun. They shouldn't have guns. Nobody argues with that. The other half of that third are people that have committed a variety of misdemeanors that disqualify them from owning a gun, but only for a period of time, 10 years or 5 years. And once they have exhausted that 10-year or 5-year prohibition, their rights are restored to them. Do you think that when their rights are restored, somebody relates that back to the database and their names are removed? No. Our government doesn't have the efficiency or the personnel to be able to even maintain it to that level. The other third of the people that are on the list are people that have mental issues. They have been legally adjudicated as having a mental problem that disqualifies them. a danger to themselves and others. Well, that's nice, but actually probably more than half of those people shouldn't be on the list. It includes people like a gal who had postpartum depression, and her medication that was issued by her doctor ran out. Doctor was on vacation overseas, couldn't renew the prescription, so she went to a medical clinic, got her prescription renewed, that automatically qualified her to be on the prohibited persons list. She didn't know. She was not informed. So at night, you know, during dinner, here come the knock on the door with the police in the ninja suits carrying machine guns. And they say, we want to come in and take your guns. You're an eagle. What? When in fact, once the postpartum depression goes away, which every doctor tells you it's a temporary condition, she should not be on any sort of a banned list. And then the last part of the list, the third, are people who are going through a divorce. People get a temporary restraining order issued against them, and they lose their gun rights. But once the temporary restraining order has been lifted, do you think somebody goes back and removes those people from the list? No. Again, the government is so inefficient in maintaining that list. They look at this as an opportunity to go and collect a bunch of guns and stack them in a pile and look and say, look, we're taking guns away from thugs and dirt bags and stuff, when in fact they're taking them away from women who have postpartum depression, veterans who have come back from overseas who might have had a temporary issue with post-traumatic stress disorder, or guys or gals going through a divorce and have lost their gun rights temporarily, or people who didn't know that their rights were restored and had their guns taken away. So it's we have an efficiency problem in government that is so overrunning the rights of law-abiding citizens that it's bad.
And let me ask you a question, and I'll use another analogy. And this is where I think this is that slippery slope, if you would, because it's like, for example, you used to get a drink on the beach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they took away the right to drink on the beach because of a few people who infringed on the right, or maybe too much violence, fighting on the beach, mm-hmm. riots, whatever, and they said, no more drinking on the beach. Now, granted, people still, you know, put their vodka and it looks like water.
Red Solo cup.
Exactly.
No more world cups. That's a song.
Exactly. But the thing about this, the reason I bring this up is because for the few accidents that happened, which are horrible, okay, and does that mean that the responsibility still isn't there? And I'll share with you a personal story real quickly here.
Mm-hmm.
One of the children that was killed in Newtown,
mm-hmm.
And I won't say the name of the child, mm-hmm. went to school here in San Diego with my son, who was 6 years old
mm-hmm.
now. And he had a crush on her. They were very close, and mm-hmm. I never told him about it, you know. Hit me really hard. I knew the family, parents, everybody was just really shocked, you know, when you hear about something like this. Had a cousin who got into his father's rifle and shot himself when he was 4 by accident. These things happen intermittently. How do we do a better job of being responsible with the right to bear arms? And for example, here's a simple question: who needs to have an automatic weapon?
Anybody who wants one.
Okay, but then I'm going to play this with you for a moment.
Please do. Please do.
No, this is all.
And for every question, I will give you a thought-provoking question back. Who needs an automobile that can drive more than 75 miles an hour?
No.
And yet everyone has one.
Yeah.
Okay,
go ahead. I agree.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Now, in terms of the reason I ask this mm-hmm. is just because in terms of responsibility and having one,
mm-hmm.
What would be the rationale of having an automatic weapon?
The rationale is that, you know, there are literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of legally owned automatic full machine guns in the United States since 1934. Do you know how many crimes have been committed since 1934 with legal machine guns? Not a single one. Nowhere in the country. Semi-automatic guns, which are vastly different than full automatic firearms. One pull, one shot. You have to look at the picture. Again, you have 400 million guns, of which of those, probably a quarter of them are the semi-automatics that you're talking about. So you're looking at 100 million semi-automatics out there. The number of accidents that occur, the number of atrocities, and all of the studies are showing that, yes, every one of these massacres is tragic, it's horrible, but we have so few of them in numbers in reality that crime, and gun crime in particular, is going down nationwide. It's been on a steady decline for 20 years.
Well, Newtown specifically, let's address that specifically, Newtown. When I don't know what the exact number was, but when they broke down the actions of the shooter that day, you know, Connecticut has some of the strictest gun laws in the country as a state. And he violated, you know, dozens of gun laws on his way to where he was going, including taking his firearm in a no-gun zone. And if you look at the Navy shipyard, that's a no-gun zone. You look at Chicago, the whole town is a no-gun zone. You know, these mentally ill people, when they go on these rampages, they do have some sanity with them. You know, they want to protect themselves. And they are, I believe, purposefully going into a situation where they know they're the only one with a firearm. But they need help. You know, the Newtown guy, the Aurora, Colorado person, you know, all of these people need help. But they're all going into situations where they know nobody else is armed.
I think you bring up a really interesting point about gun violence, actually gun crime going down, while these mass shootings have gone up. And the numbers I heard was that there was a direct correlation between the availability of mental health, availability of mental health treatment. That was sort of the key correlating factor,
right.
Not necessarily the availability of guns.
Right.
We need to quantify
that statement, though.
Okay.
You know, are mass shootings actually increasing? Because I've seen some statistics where they really aren't increasing. What's increased is instant news.
Yes.
And we have instant availability to what's going on. So we need to quantify that before we say matter-of-factly that that's a fact.
Okay.
And I don't know either way.
Yeah. What about we charge a cigarette tax? And then we use that tax to help pay offset the medical costs that people who develop cancers as a result of smoking. Why wouldn't you charge a tax on guns to offset the mental health deficit?
But what you're saying is that is it okay to charge a tax on 3 million people in America who use firearms to defend themselves successfully every single year?
Well, that was the second thing I wanted to address regarding Newtown, is the number of people each year that go ahead that
here in
defend
California
themselves.
Alone.
I'm just saying, when you buy a gun, that's one question a lot of people.
Because you're not responsible for the people who misuse anything.
So how do we address the mental?
You know, that is an issue that is not. You cannot blame gun owners for the problem. So, if it's a societal problem, society in general has to tax itself.
I think gun owners need to be at the table for this more, and I don't think they're paid enough attention to
it. That could be true
with regard to this particular set of questions. And so I think it's important for them to be there.
Well, I like what you just said, that they need to be at the table, because if there is going to be a move through the legislature to do what Sam's, you know, concerned about, you know, blaming gun owners for mental illness, there's no nexus there. You know, we have in California, we have Prop 63, Steinberg's mental health bill, which is fraught with fraud and misuse of funds, and you know, it's $1 billion a year tax that, you know, is supposed to go to mental health. Just this whole year has been multiple stories about how improperly it's being applied and used. So in California, there is a solution, but nationwide, if there's going to be this debate, you're absolutely right that gun groups need to be at the table to defend their position on that so that it's not overrun.
Because gun groups they don't advocate violence. And I think there's a big disconnect there.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of
That's
super
true.
Left
That's
groups.
Right.
They
absolutely.
Think gun
true.
Owners and gun true. Organizations are advocating these kinds of things.
But in a way,
you know, to help solve the problem, not just to defend, but to offer solutions.
Right.
Specifically with the issue of us funding, you know, gun owners funding it, there's one axiom. You cannot tax a constitutional right. We cannot tax the press because some idiot writes something using free speech on YouTube or some free...
But you can sue the press.
You can't. If they were
lying.
Lying, or, you know, if they were actually liable for some that issue. But I want to make sure that nobody says that, Sam, you didn't answer all of the questions. With regards to one of the points you brought out about the muskets and the single-shot flintlocks, those were the assault weapons of the day in our founding fathers' era. As a matter of fact, they did exactly what our government is doing, and they assign people to develop firearms that are more accurate, more efficient, easier to shoot, and easier to shoot quickly. So our founding fathers don't look upon it as the potential impact on of the weapon. And as a matter of fact, for the most part, they didn't even consider them weapons. They considered them firearms, tools that could be used for hunting, which doesn't make it a weapon, tools that can be used for recreational, which doesn't make it a weapon because you're not using it to defend yourself. But then they can be used as a weapon to defend your home and to defend your country if called upon to do so. So here in California, every single year, every single day of every year, we have 300 people who use all manner of firearms to defend themselves. In rural parts of the state, they're using ARs, AKs, legally possessed, you know, semi-automatic shotguns with 10-inch barrel, 10-round barrels, and handguns. In our cities, they're using all kinds of guns 300 times a day to defend themselves. And
those are the statistics the news doesn't pick up, and because it's not sexy. You know, it's not dramatic, it's not graphic. But, you know, 300 a day just in California.
Yeah.
People, women, children, you know, that are home when a break-in.
That number was put out by Janet Reno under.
Janet Reno put it out. Does that surprise you that Janet Reno put it out?
It surprises. Actually, she cut the number in half over what every other researcher was pointing out. You know, she said it's like 1.5 or 1.8 million, where every other research organization said it's about 3 million times a year nationwide. But even she had to admit that it's true that the law-abiding citizens use guns in a legal, defensive manner far more often than any law enforcement office, than all law enforcement officers put together on an annual basis.
What about this, going back to what you were talking about earlier, about how to kind of balance that responsibility of ownership within a certain environments? There was the accident with the kid was it Rancho Pinositos? And now the guy who owned the condo is now in jail. He was arraigned last week. He may be out on bail. But they're you know, they're charging him, you know, and sort of the circumstance from outside, from what I know now, because they haven't started the case, was that the gun was, you know, in his garage. The kid was in there, snuck into his garage, and was playing with. So they're good, but now they're going after him.
I'm not familiar with the case, so.
But let me put it in this manner, like this. Nuclear waste is a very dangerous material. Everybody agrees. It is a dare. If handled correctly, we have to deal with it. It is a fact of life. The government goes way overboard to make sure that every community that has any amount of this is educated. The local community around any of our nuclear reactors, they are informed. They're on special alerts. Every government is informed when transportation of nuclear waste is going to go through their communities and all of that stuff. Education is critical. And how many nuclear waste accidents have we had in America? None, because of education.
So how would you educate people?
We would we've been advocating this for years, and the National Rifle Association is one of the leaders in the world at firearm safety education, training gun owners in their homes, removing the mystery, safety training geared towards kids. Simple rules that say, you see a gun, stop. Don't touch, leave the room, tell an adult. They have an entire education program based on that. They want to share it with anybody they can. Do you think there's any school in the state of California that will allow firearm safety in the school.
Some.
Well, yeah, private schools are about it, but none of the public schools.
Rural areas, I think you probably find a little bit more.
Actually, even in rural areas, they reject any amount of safety training, and it's the NRA and California Rifle and Pistol Association and gun clubs like this who elevate the issue and offer safety training to resolve any of these issues. They can all be prevented with proper education. But we face a government that is so anti-gun.
Okay, that's fine.
They're so anti-gun that they don't want anybody to know. And in fact, they perpetuate the accidents by not allowing those people that have the educational material to pass out to share with people.
You know, one of the things I want to say is I think it's the misperception goes on both sides. I think sometimes people in the gun community think that people on the other side don't think guns should not have guns at all. There are people on the other side who I talk to all the time who have feelings about that. I've owned a gun, and I've gone shooting. You know, when I lived in L.A., I had a guy climb in my window 4 o'clock in the morning and put a flashlight in my face. If I'd had a gun, he probably wouldn't be here today, probably, because, you know, in that moment, you wish you had one, right? And that's just a human response to survival. But on this side, I think some people say it's okay to have a gun, you know, a handgun, but do we need, like I said, going back to issuing automatic weapons? Or if they want to shoot automatic weapons, why not have places where they can go and shoot them as opposed to having them in your home, which provides a high risk in case somebody breaks in your home, steals your weapon, or when you have somebody with mental illness who gets a hold of a weapon and can wreak havoc in ways that, and the problem is there's no check and balance. And the question is, How do we get a check and balance in the system for this?
Well,
because what we have so far isn't working. It's not well.
Yeah,
so
I think two things. We got to go back to the mental illness. You know, that's a big national debate. We've got to do something about that, and that's going to, you know, obviously, you know, there's institutions, you know, that we're talking about. We're as a society been, you know, avoiding that, you know, since the 60s and 70s, you know, medication, that kind of thing. But also the other, I think, part of that equation is enforcement and prosecution when people do violate the law.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, we're too hard on the legal ownership side of it, I believe, in California, and we're too soft on the illegal side of it. When somebody violates the law, when somebody does a criminal activity with a firearm, we put them in jail or we put them in prison for 6 months or a year, they're out. Within 24 hours, they can get another firearm and go back to what they were doing before. We've got to, as a society, decide that we're going to allow the people that own them legally to have them, and the people that shouldn't have them and should be locked up don't have them and are locked up. And until we get to that point, you know, this debate's going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, quite frankly, this debate's been going on since the founding of the country, so we're going to continue on.
This is really not an attack. So
no, we didn't take it that way.
This is really that we're trying to educate people. On the outside.
Well, I really appreciated the tone from both of you guys, and I really do believe that you're trying to get information and I appreciate that.
We've learned a lot, I think, and I understand your passion about your concern, Sam, but obviously it's well noted. And, you know, the struggle I have with, you know, with parts of it, only for me as on this side of that, I'm not the anti-gun advocate as much as I am just, you know, the question for me is, when you have things like automatic weapons, you know, with
semi-automatic weapons. There's a big difference.
Semi-automatic weapons the right people, you know, we should have a responsibility to make sure the people who have them, those people should make sure they're, I know it's a legalistic thing,
there's something in your gut that tells you what's right, but at the same time, once the lawyers get a hold of it,
that's a very good point.
Yeah, I understand, but what you'll find out today, if you're here,
and you
want to
hang around the help, right? Talk to some other
when
people.
When you go down and watch some of these gals shoot a semi-automatic rifle versus a bolt-action rifle or a pump shotgun, you're going to see how that will be the easiest thing for them to operate and defend themselves. And what the government, the government wants to handicap them and say, no, you can only, hey, 81-year-old woman, you can only use a 5-shot revolver to defend yourself in your home. Any police officer will tell you that a 5-shot revolver is far more difficult to shoot than an AR-15, accurately. And you know, it's you know, we're happy to have that debate. There are some ground foundational things that everybody has to understand that we have to work around that, and that is the Second Amendment. That is the Supreme Court decision that says that the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right. And it was so important that less than a year and a half later, the Supreme Court accepted a second lawsuit to say that it that right is so important to the ordered liberty in America that that right cannot be infringed not only by the federal government, but state and local governments. And then they kind of winked their eye and said, we know you guys are going to have to come back to us to explore this more to see what that means. It's an individual right. Justice Scalia also said that the government can clearly not ban an entire class of firearms that are popular with Americans. That's unconstitutional. You have just defined AR-15s and AK-47s, the single largest selling firearms, you know, a group of firearms being sold in America. You can't ban handguns. You can't ban semi-automatics. You can't ban all-pump shotguns or, you know, it's unconstitutional. Okay, given the Supreme Court's guidelines, let's start the conversation.
And I think that's a good spot to end there.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think enough people from either side are engaging in the conversation
right.
in any other way than these kind of very acrimonious
right.
name anecdotal and rhetoric. Yeah. And we're trying to, Sam and I are trying to rise above that and have an honest debate and an honest conversation like we had here today. I appreciate that.
I really appreciate your
Yeah, we'll always speak with anybody who wants to discuss this subject matter.
I mean, even if you respectfully disagree, you can, to me as an adult, you can...
Absolutely.
And you can agree, like, I think I agree with part of what you're saying, the part that it's more comedic, you know, but that's the way human beings are,
right.
you know, and like I said, I think venues like this are incredibly helpful because it brings people out to help gain a better understanding of arms. Mm-hmm. I do think that if people get by arms, they should have to go get some training on how to use one. I think that's another one of the problems is that people go and can buy a gun, but they haven't had any training on how to use a gun or how to shoot it properly, and that's another thing I think at least in terms of getting people more responsible, if you're going to have one, learn how to handle a
response. But again, given that statement, the fact of the matter is that here in California, last year 1.3 million new firearms transactions took place. This year it's going to be closer to 1.5 million, and yet we don't have an increase in the number of accidents, which kind of proves is the telling of the tale that people are being responsible. They are buying guns, and although we don't know about it, they are finding some sort of training from somewhere because nobody's having accidents. It's a rare occasion that an accident occurs. So, again, we have to be honest and
we need to spend some more time together.
Yeah,
definitely. I appreciate your time.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. We thank you for giving us the opportunity to have this discussion. It's really good.
Good.